Hey everybody, this is Brett, and today is November 15th. Welcome back to School Sucks Podcast. Today on the show, you're going to hear a discussion that I had on Free Radical Radio, hosted by a friend of mine, friend of ours, John Kurtz. Free Radical Radio is it's an AM station down in Florida, but it was just added to the Liberty Radio Network, so you can check out the show there as well. The topic of our discussion, education, we explored from a few different angles than I think I've tried before, so I hope you enjoy it. And new shows are right around the corner, and I mean new shows, not just me riding around on other people's coattails, you know, reposting interviews and stuff like that. So thank you for your patience and for sticking with the show. And we'll return soon, so thank you for listening, and take care.
Okay, hold on one second. That was right.
All right.
You know, there's so many trades out there, electricians, plumbers, on, that people could go get an apprenticeship and actually get a good job. And when they're 18, they can go out and actually make, you know, $30-$40 an hour instead of, you know, going to school and coming out 4 years later with $100,000 in debt and no real skills to speak of.
Mm-hmm.
So with that, we're going to go ahead and go to Brett, just called in, our special guest. Sucks Podcast, are you there?
Hey, John, how are you?
Hey, very good, Brett. Thanks so much for calling in and joining us today. We really appreciate it. And I was saying before how much I admired the School Sucks Podcast. It's absolutely one of my all-time favorite podcasts, and I listen to a lot of different podcasts. Now,
thanks.
If people want to check this out, you can go to schoolsuckspodcast.podomatic.com or also edolution.com. That's edlution.com. Is that correct?
Yep, and School Sucks Project will also get you to that same site.
Perfect. And you can all, of course, just Google School Sucks Podcast, and I'll get you there anyway. Now, Brett, you're based out of New Hampshire, correct?
That is correct, yes.
All right. So, you know, he's got an audience that's just unbelievable, and he's sort of a libertarian mindset from what I can tell, but his detail and the way he goes into public education from all different angles is, I think, just unsurpassed, and there's nobody I'd rather discuss public education with. So we're blessed. Anybody here in Orlando, if you have, of course, questions for Brett, you can go ahead and give us a call, 407-774-0810. But let me get the first question in, Brett. You know, just to start off, tell us a little bit about your history, your background, and what made you decide to create the School Sucks Podcast.
Well, my experience working mostly around the public education system and, you know, state-managed education in general for about a decade, the things I saw, the things I participated in early in my career, and, you know, I thought that I really could have benefited from something like this when, you know, I was 16, 17 years old, and school was not really a challenge for me, but a real imposition, and I had a lot of difficulty. And I just, you know, I think what most people internalize is that there's something wrong with them. Everybody does this. This is public school. And, you know, if you don't like it or you're not performing as you're supposed to, that's not a problem with the school. That's a problem with you, buddy. So I think that's how I felt. I think that's how a lot of kids feel. And certainly from my experience, kids have communicated that same idea to me. And also, John, of course, I used to be a teacher. I like to talk and have people listen. So that was part of the motivation, too.
Absolutely. And so, I mean, the bottom line here is that they try with schools, they try to teach everybody the same way. They try to really just make everybody learn the same thing the same way, sit still, you know, and that everybody's not the same. And for the government to assume that everybody is the same is just a complete fallacy, that everybody can learn the same way.
Well, you know, the other thing, too, I don't think that I get what you're saying. I don't think that the people who manage the education system on a state or a federal level, and more importantly, the people who thought up this system, I think that, you know, the impetus for spreading it the way that it spread throughout the end of the 19th century and throughout the 20th century was the recognition that everybody was not the same. But, you know, if you're trying to manage an entire society and you're just a little group of people, You got to make everybody as the same as possible so they're manageable and predictable. And I think that's what's happened.
And that was the Prussian school model, which I guess it was essentially founded on, right?
Oh, yeah, sure.
Yeah, I mean, the Prussian, 19th century Prussian. Yeah, that their idea was, you know, they want a bunch of, yeah, they want the majority of the class to be a bunch of, you know, basically very obedient workers, and they want only the very, you know, the top, like, 10 and top 3% to have any additional training and teach them actually how to think and how to do anything. And that's really what most of Western society schools, you know, the schools are, you know, sort of founded on. It's the same thing here. I mean, you know, the famous John D. Rockefeller quote is, "We want a nation of workers, not a nation of thinkers." And I think that's very telling, being that he was, you know, one of the primary advocates for compulsory public school back in the late 19th century, early 1900s. Now, Brett, your program's a little different because there's a lot of people out there that say, you know, we need this kind of school reform. You know, they all have their own ideas. But you are one of the few people that openly advocate for just the complete recall of all public education, the end of public education. Why are you so radical, Brett?
Well, yeah, and you know, the thing that I've learned in the last couple of years of doing this show and talking to other people in general is that is very radical. You know, I used to think, I was very naive, that if I just talked to people and I had facts and I had evidence and I was able to put them together in a reasonable, logical way, people would take me seriously. And that doesn't always happen. And when I said initially with the show, the end of public education, well, of course, that would be the ultimate goal, because I think that a lot of the other things that people are talking about as far as, like, getting corruption out of government or getting rid of the Federal Reserve or ending these wars, I think that people really need to come back to this recognition of what happens to us when we're young and what makes so many people so accepting of the state in adulthood. And I think that this is really the place that needs to be the primary focus. You know, I see a lot of people doing a lot of great, courageous activism, but a lot of times, to me, it seems like, you know, trying to protest the TSA by snagging airplanes out of the air as they leave the runway. And I think, you need to come back to the beginning. You need to come back to where this starts, to where these ideas and these seeds are planted. And I've tried to make that my focus personally, professionally, with any of the activism or any of the media that I've done.
Gotcha. Perfect. All right. We're going to take a quick break here. Brett, stick on the line with us. We're going to come back, and I'm going to ask you a little bit about the business plan that you so eloquently put together for public schools.
Sure.
So stick around. Please join us with your phone calls, 407-774-0810. This is Free Radical Radio on WEUS, the Big 810 Orlando.
Right, so it's just going to be me and you here during the commercials, so I thought I would grab my guitar, and we could do some sing-alongs. This is a little song I wrote back when I auditioned for the children's program, The Wiggles. This was for their Spanish language week, and it's called I Like to Play the Guitar. And this is the Spanish language version. I don't really speak Spanish or play the guitar.
You must try.
Hey, buddy, we're on a break. We'll be right back with you in a minute and a half or 2 minutes, okay?
All right, sounds good.
All right, thank you. In Big 8, 10 a.m., you get a free appetizer. Sushi Lola's. The finest sushi.
All right, so where were we? All right, we really need to breathe some life into this one, so I'm going to need you to sing along. Yo quiero tocar la guitarra y necesito bailar a la música. Now, this is just the chorus. This is just, you know, building the basic structure of the song. We're going to work on verses in the upcoming commercial breaks. So, and if you've got a guitar at home, pick it up. This is a real basic strum here. It's just A, G, D, A.
well. We need talented individuals who have dreams of having a radio show with endless possibilities.
See, that's easy. Okay, now, I think that I need to Spanish up that voice a little bit. Maybe more of a kind of an old...
So call us today.
Let's try this.
Radio show on the Big 8 407-402-3637. Control your own destiny and reach your unlimited financial goals. Call today, 407-402-3637.
Your Kia wrote the Carola guitar and as a sito palabra la música. Your Kia wrote the Carola guitar and as a sito palabra la música.
Replacing the positives, online reputation and
That's a chorus.
You have too much clutter around the house.
Basic structure.
You need to declutter and stage your home for a quick sale.
All right, I think we're coming back in like 15 seconds here. So we'll work more on the verses to that the next commercial break. See you then.
331 storage. Zippy Shell Mobile Self Storage for convenient, affordable storage.
The Big 8 Real Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome back. This is Free Radical Radio on the Big 810 AM. Feel free to give us a call, and you can also speak with our special guest, Brett, from School Sucks Podcast. Our number is 407-774-0810, 407-774-0810. We'd love to hear from you. Like I mentioned earlier, unfortunately, our live stream online is down currently, but not to worry, because pretty soon, FreeRadicalOrlando.com will be online with all of our podcast archives and live streams there, as well as lots of other great stuff. So we were speaking with Brett about public education, mm-hmm. and the fact that there's just so many things wrong with it, and Brett's position is ideally we just end the whole thing, because it's like, I mean, how are you going to fix when something's so broken? Do you just throw it out, or do you try to fix it, or do you just start from scratch? Sort of like, you know, with a tree, a dead tree, do you just hack at the limbs, or do you just strike the root? And that's really the question.
Yeah, well, it's so huge now. I think if you devolve it to a local level where it originally started, you're going to have a lot of problems, and you're going to have some nightmares. But eventually, it'll land on its feet, and the people who are responsible for it will be locally based.
Right,
and you know,
of course, you can hold somebody accountable.
You can hold somebody accountable. Their funding will be locally based. They won't be beholden to all these diktat and straitjacket laws and or rulings or whatever you want to call them. That they get from up above at the state and national levels. I mean, it sounds radical, but the result is radical. It's radically bad. You know, I mean, it's really frightening, considering you go out in time and every year you get another mass of these people coming out that have some real problems. I understand that the smartest of the kids, you know, they're going to tend to educate themselves anyway, because they have a thirst for knowledge. And one thing that I noticed that, two or three of the best teachers that I had in the public schools, and I'm a product of Orange County Public Schools, they tried to instill an innate sense of curiosity about the world. You know?
Right.
And, all teachers should do that. You know, I know all teachers aren't going to do that, because they probably don't have an innate curiosity about the world themselves. But
I tend to think that, I mean, the fact that they try to sit everybody in these neat little rows, and everybody needs to sit down, raise their hand.
Motivate them to educate themselves.
Right, exactly.
Give a man a hook and he feeds himself forever. You know, give a man a fish, he's got one night of food. It's the same thing, you know. Educate them to be curious and to want to learn more. And that's not going to work with all of them, but it's going to plant the seed in the people who want to be there. Because again, forcing people who want to be there, you know, because it's somehow you think they should. I think in our society presently is an unmitigated disaster, because it holds back all the people who really do want to be there and really are, you know, aggressively academic. And
right.
it's really a tragedy for them, and as a result, a tragedy for the society, because you really want those achievers to get out there and, you know, give everybody else jobs eventually.
Right, exactly. And now, so going back to Brett, I mean, one of the most, and Brett is, of course, with the School Sucks podcast, one of the most profound podcasts of yours I ever heard, I think, was discuss the business plan of public schools. Now, can you give us a quick overview of this business plan? Of course, you can't get into everything, but just, you know, kind of walk us through it a little bit of what is the business plan of public schools and why is it so, I guess, so successful yet so evil?
Oh, sure. And just a quick comment on the last piece of the discussion there. I don't think it's so much about teaching kids motivation or teaching kids curiosity. In fact, I think it takes a pretty active intervention to stop those, what I believe to be natural processes from taking place. And school is that intervention, unfortunately, for too many kids. I think that, you know, the problems with education, a lot of these teachers that you guys described as being, you know, active and engaged and, you know, quality educators, I think most teachers start like that. I think they're idealistic, and I think that the problems with education to some extent are systemic. And the biggest problem that I tried to deal with right in the beginning of the show in what I called the business plan was the problem of a service being funded by the use of force. I mean, if you don't have the option of withdrawing your money, if you don't have the option of voting with your dollars, so to speak, then what is the incentive for quality in anything that the government does?
Right.
There is none. So,
you mean because you're being taxed and forced to pay against your will because you're being taxed?
Exactly.
I mean, it's whether you want to use the services or not. I mean, even, you know, you may have the option to send your child to a private school, but regardless of what you do, you're still going to have to pay for this public education. And, you know, it's completely different from the sort of free market perspective of it where, you know, there's plenty of different schools. Some are going to specialize in some things, and the schools that actually do a good job are going to get the business, and the ones that don't do a good job are going to fade out. And where we have this public school system that you have to pay for, and not only do you have to pay for, you have to go to it, then,
if you're participating in the product.
Exactly.
As long as you don't have children.
Yeah, you don't have children, it doesn't matter. You still have to pay for it. And, you know, so they have no motivation whatsoever to succeed and to actually teach our children things.
Right. Now, if I'm an entrepreneur, like I was saying in that show, and I want to start a business, but I also happen to be a political person, a Republican or a Democrat, I can't take my public or political ethics and apply them to my private life. You know, I can't say, well, you know, in my public life, I love violence and I love the use of force as long as that force is being used to benefit the causes and the political positions that I like. I can't grab a gun and start waving it around at people and say, oh, you know, I'm trying to start a business here. That's how I want things to happen in my public life. So why is that not okay in my private life? And that, I think, was the thrust of that show.
Yeah, I'm going to start a business, and so I'm going to come to your house and with a gun and say, hey, you know, you need to pay for my business, you know, for my services, and you get to send your children to school, and that's great. But regardless of whether you want to or not, you need to pay for this service that I'm going to provide, or otherwise I'll take your home away from you. You don't have children? Well, that's okay. You can pay too.
All levels, almost at any level, governance force, essentially, if you tear it down to its quintessential essence,
right.
Force.
Absolutely.
Coercion.
That's what government is by itself. So, and I think that, you know, education and educating our children and the future of this country is something that's so extremely important that how dare we let something so important be in the hands of the government, for crying out loud. And what have they ever done right? I mean, Brett, do you know one example of anything government's ever done well?
I think this school system is probably their biggest success, not in the sense of educating children, like providing an authentic education that teaches kids in terms of what I would call the trivium, you know, grammar, understanding language, logic, understanding how language works together, and rhetoric, understanding how to communicate that information to other people, and also understanding how to spot faulty reasoning in people who are trying to persuade or manipulate you. It's none of that, but I mean, it is in all other senses, as far as like an institution of public management, it's a resounding success. It's actually incredible. And, you know, when it comes to the question of does school suck, it depends on who you ask. If you ask the kids, if you ask the parents, I think even if you ask a lot of the teachers, they would say, yeah, this is terrible. But if you ask this group of presidential candidates, if you ask people in bureaucracies, if you ask advertisers, corporations, they would think that this is like a huge success. So there's
textbook
one, John.
Manufacturers.
What's that?
Yeah, exactly. Textbook manufacturers, textbook publishers.
They think it would be great.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, this is a system that they've come up with where they can, you know, continue to take your money and impose a so-called service upon you. Now,
so what you're saying is chaos is a matter of perspective?
Sure.
Brett? It seems like that's what you're saying. Because it's so much of it's chaotic. You know, there's one ruling to do something one year, and then everybody does that, and then they turn around and walk all the way across the other outside of the football field, and they start playing the tune over here this way, and it's just this monolithic bureaucracy from the top down that everybody just – there's no excellence at all because there's so much paperwork to do, and everybody's exhausted from the bureaucratic malaise.
What was that term you said yesterday, the other day, about the token of a bureaucrat is the – what did you say about excellence? Just, you know, the absolute, oh. Basically the opposite of excellence.
Oh, well then perhaps it's what Hayek said, is the bureaucrat's main loyalty reminds is his immediate superior, you know. And his the bureaucrat's entire job, no matter what bureaucracy it is to keep his immediate superior happy. And the more successful he will be is based on the happiness of his immediate superior.
Exactly. Brett, we got a quick cut to break here again. Can you stick around with us for one more segment? I got a few more questions for
Absolutely.
You. Okay, perfect. This is Free Radical Radio here on the Big 810 AM WEUS. Give us a call. This is your chance, Orlando, to speak to Brett Viennet, 407-774-0810.
Now, while a really catchy chorus can be very helpful to any song, it's also important to have some substantive lyrics, some verses where, you know, the idea in the chorus is expanded upon a bit. So I'll put these in the show notes so you can practice this at home with whatever you have. You know, if you don't know how to play the guitar or the piano, get yourself a recorder, you know, like the ones we used to play in school. That would do just fine to have a little melody in the background there. So, okay, let's see. You can sing the parts you know, and then I'll do the verses.
Selection of immaculate pre-owned vehicles. Discuss your options
just through my pick now. All right, so here's a verse.
RPT sales is open Monday through Saturday.
I'm gonna go over it with you in Spanish.
All right.
Cantando y bailando, haceme muy feliz. Te vas a davir cantando me. Well, here's the translation.
Hey, Brett, you there?
Hey,
Brett, it's Tom.
What's up?
We're about to come back on. We got a couple different things. How much, if we need you, can you stick around until 8 o'clock?
Oh, sure. That's what I plan to do anyway.
Okay, cool. Perfect. All right, so we'll get into some different, because we weren't sure how much to squeeze in and what to do possibly after we got off the line with you, but we'll just run right through it.
Cool.
All right, I appreciate it.
No problem.
Designer and classic burger. Pick your size. A third.
Now, some of you might be saying, Brett, I noticed you're a really good singer. What's the secret? Well, here's the thing. Don't go and take singing lessons and like, oh, we're going to harness all of the natural qualities of your voice and really bring them out. That's a lot of work. You want to be a singer, make up a voice. Make up a voice. It's way funnier to like have a made-up singing voice. That's what I do. That's the secret. So before we did like an older Spanish man, well, he's Spanish by language, Mexican by ethnicity. Now we're just going to give him a pencil-thin mustache. And if you don't have a lot of experience with this, you might be saying, Brett, what the hell kind of a difference is giving the guy a pencil-thin mustache in your imagination going to have in his singing voice? You might be surprised, so stay tuned. We're going to find out what kind of a difference it makes at the next commercial break.
Whitcomb Kincaid here, Free Radical Radio. Please call in, folks. We'd love to hear from you, 407-774-0810. I'm here with my brilliant young co-host, John Kurtz. And subject tonight is public education.
A little bit of
a little bit of research I did here just how far, how long the cliff is that we've fallen down. Now, this is I've got an 1895 eighth grade final exam from I believe this is Salina, Kansas.
1895. Wasn't everybody just a dumb farmer back then?
Exactly. No, they're just these idiots, you know, okay, walking around these little towns. They had horses and buggies. Uh-huh. Can you imagine? You know. All right. So this is for the 13-year-olds, folks. Salina, Kansas, 1895. See how many you get right. I'm not gonna tell all of them, but just grammar, time 1 hour. These are just a few of the questions. Name the parts of speech and define those that have no modifications. Another question, define verse, stanza, and paragraph. 5, define case, illustrate each case. Oh, by the way, you might notice there are no multiple choice answers.
Right.
You either know the material or you do not.
Right. That's very important.
So half of you are shaking in fear right now. Arithmetic, name the fine, and define the fundamental rules of arithmetic.
I don't know what that is.
Yeah. 10, write a bank check, a promissory note, and a receipt.
Write a promissory note.
Fine cost of 6,720 pounds of coal, $6 per ton. That's not really that hard, but you still have to know how to do it.
This is for 13-year-olds.
13-year-olds.
In 1895.
If they didn't pass it, they could not be promoted. They would go back to the farm or whatever. U.S. history time. Write the causes and results of the Revolutionary War. Who are the following? Morse, Whitney, Fulton, Bell, Lincoln, Penn, and Howe.
I think that question is a little skirted because back in 1895, I'm sure they'd be a lot more, you know, those would be more modern figures
right,
for them, but
right,
nonetheless.
Well, Howe invented the sewing machine. Penn was the guy who founded Pennsylvania. Lincoln freed the slaves. Bell invented the telephone. Fulton invented the steamboat.
Lincoln.
Whitney was the guy who made practical cotton, and Morse invented the telegraph. I just happen to know those. But okay, now this
you look those up. What are you talking about?
Bell invented the flying sewing machine. I know how to sew. Okay, orthography. Orthography.
I have no idea what that is.
This is the orthography part of the test. What is even the damn? What's the subject here? Okay. What are elementary sounds? How are they classified? What are the following? And give examples of each: trigraph, subvocals, diphthong, cognate letters, and linguals. Orthography is the standardized rules of using letters to write languages. I won't go on too much more, but name the principal trade centers in the U.S. The Atlantic coast and the Pacific coast have the same latitude. Why is the temperature different in the water? It goes on and on. It's really tough. The one from Virginia is very similar.
You know what I noticed about that test, too, is because this is 1895. Now, if I remember when I was 13-year-old taking these tests, the vast majority of them, not only were they multiple choice, but they were mostly, you know, at what date did this happen?
Mm-hmm.
And silly things like that, you know, they weren't. They didn't really.
They didn't deal with principles.
Yeah,
exactly.
Exactly. They dealt with these sort of arbitrary facts, mm-hmm, that you know. And I don't know if any of you out there listening have children that are 13 or possibly are 13 yourself. We'd love to hear from you as to what is on their tests these days, because I don't think it probably measures up.
I had the pleasure of being in the Soviet university system for one summer, and in the Soviet university system there are no written tests. You know, you sit down and the teachers are sitting at the table and they ask you questions.
Uh-oh. Hello?
They're being used to their full potential because now, Brett, of course we have Brett with School Sucks Podcast on the line. Brett, you just heard these questions from this 1895 test. I mean, how does that compare to what you think your 13-year-old in today's school system learns?
I wouldn't expect the average 13-year-old, and I've worked with kids that age, to know most of that information. You know, I mean, maybe they'd fare a little bit better on a multiple-choice test. But what I hear, what I see in that is the message of dependence. I think that when the public school system was new, and let's remember, too, when the government of this country was a lot newer than it is today, I think people were far more self-reliant, and I think that as the government grows and it tries to dangle more things in front of people, sort of the road to serfdom effect, people trade in that self-reliance for dependence. It's certainly been one of the messages of school. I think that, you know, 120 years ago, yeah, you would have
right.
You would need to know how to write something. You would need to
know
how to find and do certain things. You would need to be fairly useful.
The other little bit of realism, when my father was born in 1906, he was a whole generation older than the fathers of the boys my age. And he grew up on a farm in Wisconsin, and I can tell you the reason they studied so hard is because they wanted to get the hell off the farm.
Right.
Because it was a tough existence. So they studied their balls off just to get off the farm,
right,
and, you know, into a town somewhere or the city so they can have a life.
Whereas today they don't study because they know they can just go out, get out and go on the welfare and, you know.
Exactly. You know, go down the car in a corner and shoot some hoop and, you know, go get a burger at, you know, wherever. You know, it's life is so much easier. So they were very much more motivated. But that being as it is, I think it's still indicative of a system that's, you know, really got a lot of bad approaches. They also not being able to fire the teachers, you know, from the teachers.
Yeah,
that's a critical problem, I think.
Now, Brett, let's talk a little bit about, I know your ultimate goal would be to just end the entire public school, you know, system, as it were, but let's just look at some possible proactive steps to maybe go in that direction, as it were. I mean, because it's going to be very difficult to convince your average person who's relied on the school system. You know, now we have, for the most part, in families, both parents are working. You know, they count on the school not only to educate their children, quote unquote, but also to, you know, take care of their children during the day. Now, what steps can we
sure.
take to maybe, you know, move back on this? I mean, what would your thoughts be on something like school vouchers and things like that to try and increase competition within schools as a first step to the ultimate goal of ending public education?
Well, you know, first of all, too, I think that since the beginning of the show, I've modified the message a little bit, and I'm not so much using that tagline, the end of public education, anymore as...
But I love that tagline.
We need to have an evolution. We need to have an evolution, and we need to have a redefinition of what education is. We need to take that word back from the state and take that word back from this bureaucracy. And return it to what it actually means. It doesn't mean being stuffed into a building and, you know, told what to do and told when you're good for 35 hours a week. So I think that that's an essential part of moving in the right direction. Now, of course, you know, the whole thing, could I press a button tomorrow and end the public education system? I don't know how I feel about that. Of course the system is a disaster, but you think about how many people are relying on it. You know, I have a brother who has two kids. I know people who are teachers who have kids. And you know, I think that I'm not in a position where I would want to overnight force my views on anybody, even though I think that in the long term, or, you know, even in the relative short term, things would improve dramatically. But the more young people that we can reach, mainly high school kids and hopefully young parents, that if they've already started to use the system and rely on the system, that they could pull their kids out as soon as possible. If you're countering the messages of school that I was speaking about earlier, as far as, you know, dependence and the infantilization of the population, that when that test you were reading from was written, you know, an eighth grader was about ready to be an adult in that society. Today, you're about ready to be an adult
well,
when you're
exactly,
26.
Yeah.
So I think that
good,
if...
Just get over the whole parenting issue, you know. Put responsibility on your children. My wife and I did this. We put our responsibility on our children when they were young, you know, so they learned to handle their own responsibility, you know, and they learned to behave responsibly and take care of themselves. But, you know, the thing you brought up, something you said reminded me, I can't remember what it is, but essentially you want to put responsibility of the management of these schools on a local level. Get the tax base, make it local, and make all the administration local. You don't want to have the centralized, monolithic power structure. That's what's choking it to death, I think.
Yeah, I mean,
as an archetype, at least.
I think that that would probably be an improvement over what we have now. I wouldn't want to stop there. And I have a real... It's really hard for me to talk about political solutions to this problem in any sense, because I'm pretty sure
but
that they would ultimately
fail. But that's not a political solution.
Fail.
That is a management solution.
And I think
problem.
That if that's
the
where
I like
the,
to say that there's no
okay.
government solution to a government problem.
Except cutting
I
government.
Agree.
Just
yeah.
making it smaller. Demolishing it. You know, make it, you know, just not fund it and have it be smaller.
And let's simplify this. Let's just say, Brett, for instance, if you could press a button tomorrow and get rid of, say, the Federal Department of Education, would that be a first step you'd be willing to do?
It's a difficult question to answer because I'm not sure what the implications of that would be for individuals. I mean, I'd like to say yes. I think that that would be a step in the right direction. But, you know, I think all of these ideas about returning school to the state or local level, what's implied there is that government can shrink.
Right.
Governments exactly. Don't shrink. They only collapse.
Yeah,
they only
like
collapse. They never
bigger and
shrink.
Bigger and bigger and eventually bust. Now,
look out.
So, yeah, it would be great to not have the Department of Education, but we have it, and we need to kind of,
so,
you know,
I mean, Brett, I think, like, one possible solution would be, you know, just allowing to bring competition into schools would be the voucher program. Let's just say, hypothetically, for each child you have, you get, say, a $5,000, you know, tax return or however they work it out, where that you can then use that money to send your child to private school. Because I'm willing to bet that if such a system was implemented, overnight you'd see all these schools popping up where the tuition for your child is, you know, right around $5,000, and you'd have the ability to take your child from one place to the other and choose what's the best education for your child. And I think eventually with that program, you know, virtually nobody would want to be in the public schools anymore unless they shaped up. And if they shaped up, great. If they can compete in the real marketplace, that's fine. What are your thoughts on that?
John, I hate to be such a cynic, but, you know, beautiful new houses bring new termites. And, you know, I think that what you're talking about, I totally agree with you that that's what would happen, that if people were given the proper incentives to set up these schools and, you know, tuitions could come down. I think instead of, you know, the public school bureaucracy shifting into a mindset where, oh, well, now we have to compete, now we have to get our act together, I think that we would see the Department of Education, the state departments of education, as well as the federal departments of education saying, well, if we can't just have all these schools set up willy-nilly and we not know what's going on there. I mean, they need to be, if these people are getting, if these schools are getting taxpayer money, they need to have oversight and they need to be regulated. So we need to step in and see what they're doing and have a watchful eye over them. And like I've said many times on my show before, I think that the teachers' unions would also say, who are these teachers who are working at these schools? Are they certified? What are their credentials? Did they get their master's within 5 years of starting teaching? They're supposed to do that. And you know, they should probably be brought into the NEA. You know, so they can adhere to the same rigorous standards that the rest of us have to adhere to in the public system. So I think what you would see is you would set up something that would look like competition, that would look like the illusion of the free market being inserted into the government system, and then very quickly I think it would be swallowed in to the rest of the system. And you know, a lot of people, it's interesting too, because I've heard conversations, I've been listening to NPR. That's I don't recommend that, but I've been listening to it here and there for a while. And they were having a lot of conversations about the crisis in education today. And it sounds like a lot of people who are in favor of the public schools are against the idea and even fearful of the idea of these charter schools and these vouchers coming in. And they say, let's just put all that energy into fixing what we already have.
Sure. I mean, as long as the government is allowed essentially a monopoly on the use of force, you know, they're going to be able to do what they want. And if the teachers unions and everybody else gets to them, you know, to really crack down on these you know, newly created private schools that are popping up, I think they have you're right, they have every incentive in the world to go in and try to regulate them and reel them into the bureaucracy and, you know, essentially, you know, just be like a Trojan horse kind of effect. Like, now you've got all these other schools, but they're all part of the same bureaucracy. We got to go to a break real quick, and we have some calls on the line as well. Brett, you can stick around with us till 8 o'clock. We'd really appreciate it. We do have some calls on the line for you. And this is Free Radical Radio. Feel free to give us a call. We still have time for you, 407-774-0810.
All right. So, pencil-thin mustache voice. Uno, dos, tres, cuatro.
Cantando y bailando, hacemos feliz. Te vas a ver cantando, cantando a mí.
Ooh, you hear that little attitude that he gets from the mustache? And
yo quiero tocar la guitarra y necesito bailar a la música. Yo quiero tocar la guitarra.
My wife and I have tried them all.
Okay, that's probably enough. Well, unless you're wondering, this is a Spanish song, right? So you're probably saying, what are the lyrics in English? I want to know what this is all about. Well, I have the lyrics written down in Spanish here in a little notepad file, so let me just run them into a Spanish to English translator. I don't even really remember. I wrote this a long time ago, and I was really excited about learning Spanish, and I thought I was getting pretty good at it, but I can't even remember what all of this says. Probably should have actually checked it before I did my Wiggles audition. All right, here we go. In English.
I'd like to play the guitar, and I also need to dance to the music. I like to play the guitar, and I also need to dance to the music.
Doesn't really translate to English very well. Jeez, rough.
Car cool in Longwood. Car cool, family owned.
Let's try one of the verses.
Singing and dancing makes me very happy. You have fun singing. Sing to me. Come along with me. We will make some music. Then come to my house and pee in my mouth.
Wait.
Other auto repair shops in the area bring their work.
Something's not right.
That's
not. Hold on.
Drive right over to Car Cool. Open Monday.
It's not. Those are not supposed to be the words.
4:30 p.m. 9:15 Silkwood Court, Longwood.
I think this is starting to explain why I didn't get the part on the Wiggles. Jeez. It's supposed to be not. Then come to my house and pee in my mouth. It's supposed to be. Then come to my house and we'll have a dance party. Oh man, I really trusted my Spanish skills maybe more than I should have there. All right, well, I'm a little embarrassed, so I think we're about to come back to the show anyway.
Hello and welcome back. This is Free Radical Radio on WEUS, the Big 810 AM Orlando. Feel free to give us a call, 407-774-0810. We still have a few minutes here for your call. I'm going to lead us in with a quick, another. We were talking about this 1895 eighth grade test before, and this is actually a test from 1931, and it's a civics test.
West Virginia.
In West Virginia. The question is, it's an essay question.
13-year-olds.
For 13-year-olds, again. What does the family do for the education of the children that the school cannot do? What does the school do that the family cannot? Now, do you think for a second in the schools we have today they would pose that question to children and let them actually give them a chance to actually think about it? Absolutely.
They'd be absolutely mortified.
Absolutely. So we do have a caller on the line. Sarah is on the line. Sarah, you're on Free Radical Radio. What's on your mind?
Hey, guys. How are you doing tonight?
Very good. How are you?
Good. Thanks for calling.
Good, Karen. Good. I was just listening, and, you know, the public education thing, and I'm a young mom, and I have a six-year-old who is in our Orange County public education system, and my biggest conflict is I would love to send them to a private school. I was raised in private school. My parents made the option to send me to a private school because they were so insecure about sending me to the private school system. But as a young mom, I don't have the funds to do that, and I don't have much of an option other than that. I work 40 hours a week on a regular basis, sometimes up to 50, and I don't have another option, and it's a very difficult conflict because I don't feel like he's getting the education that he needs because I don't know what's going on all day long. And I'm coming home, and I'm doing a bunch of homework and things that I feel like they should be doing within. I understand there's practice, but I feel like those things should, a lot of it should be done within the classroom. And not that I would love to take it over as a parent myself, but with the amount of work that I do, I only get 3 hours a night with him anyways before he has to go to bed and wake up and do the same thing again.
And that's what's one of the most difficult things about, you know, this education system. I think this education system really ties in really well with how they've sort of manufacture our economy, if you will, to make it so that both parents have to work all the time. And I appreciate your call, Sarah. Brett, what are your thoughts on that? Do you have any ideas for Sarah as a young mother who, works all the time, and, you know, what she wants to kind of get out of the public school system, but she can't, and there's nothing she can do, and she has to send her kid to school. What are your thoughts? What are your ideas for her?
Well, I don't think that there's anything wrong with a parent, who doesn't have any other choice but to send their kids to these schools during the day because they have to work. I mean, that's reality right now. I mentioned I had a brother. He has two kids. That's what he has to do. I've talked to him about, as soon as it's possible that you feel comfortable with them at home on their own, if you're comfortable too, and if you think it's the right thing to do, and if that's what they want to do, get them out of there. But I think the most dangerous thing about the messages and the curriculum of government school is that when it goes unchecked by parents at home, parents who understand the idea of personal freedom, the idea of self-ownership, the non-aggression principle, if they're not involved in checking in and saying, so what are they telling you at this place every day?
Right.
I think that a child doesn't have to be too old to have a very realistic conversation with them about the realities of why they have to go to that place every day and what they should be trying to get out of it and what they should be leaving behind. So, you know, I'm totally sympathetic to that situation. Of course, I'm not a parent. I know it's difficult, and I don't think people should really beat themselves up about the fact that they have no other course of action they can take but to put their child on that bus every morning.
Yeah.
That is the reality, and like this is the result of a system that has engendered a sense of dependence in all of its graduates for the better part of the last 100 years.
Right, I agree. And I think, another way to look at it, too, is if we didn't have a system that was taxing people at, you know, probably something like 50% once you add it all up together, you know, both parents probably wouldn't have to work and somebody could stay home with the kids. But, I mean, I agree with you absolutely. I think that the most important thing, it's not all bad, and I think there's some good things that you could potentially get from sending your kids to public school, the ability to interact with different groups of people and things like that. But I also think that it's extremely important that you keep that in check and you have conversations with your child every single day about, you know, what they, not just what they learn in school, but what they, you know, what happened, what are they telling you, and just really try to be a part of their educational process. Just about out of time. That's Brett Vionette with the School Sucks podcast, and it's schoolsucksproject.com. Is that correct?
That is correct.
All right. We really appreciate you being on the show. Hopefully we can get you on another time as well. And definitely go check out the School Sucks podcast. You know, if you were at all intrigued by anything we
Hello? I think that was it. I think the call just ended. So I guess we're done with Free Radical Radio. And now it's just me and you. And I have something I'd like to tell you. Now, turkey is a type of food, but a turkey can also be your pet. And if you name your pet turkey after me, you'd have a turkey named Steve. The song was written by my friend Steve. And with Thanksgiving just a little over a month away, that song gives us all a little something to think about, doesn't it? Good night, everyone. This was an awful show.